This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
End of April and almost the beginning of May. Can fire season be all that far away? Well, we're going to talk to Kyle Reed of the Douglas Forest Protective Association. Thanks for coming in this afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
Well, the weather lately has been kind of back and forth. We're into this nice period of several sunny days around 80 and then down to the 70 degree mark for the weekend. Had some rain last week, but as we enter May on Saturday, I don't think we're that far away from fire season.
Yeah, you know, when you look at kind of where we're at, we're trending ahead of normal quite a bit. You know, typically for us, the start of fire season is around the middle of June or so. But when you look at the conditions around, things are definitely drying out. You know, you can drive around, you know, the Umpqua Valley here and see a lot of those south-facing slopes and the shallow soils already, you know, the grass is changing, it's drying out, and, you know, we're starting to have some fire runs because of it.
You know, I noticed over the weekend, in fact, late last week, I was coming home one night and realized that I needed to run the sprinkler system, which is not something I often do in April.
Yeah, I've heard that from a lot of people so far that, you know, people have started irrigating already, which is very unusual for April, but it's definitely a sign of where we are with fuels conditions right now.
So Saturday, officially Wildfire Preparedness Day. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so there's actually two campaigns coming up here in the near future. So the first one is Wildfire Preparedness Day, and that's sponsored by the National Fire Protection Association. And the thought there is, you know, the first Saturday of May is kind of a great time for a lot of people throughout the western portion of the United States that are approaching fire season to have an opportunity to, you know, start preparing, start thinking about it. And it could be, you know, an opportunity to start working on the fuels mitigation around the home. It could be an opportunity to, you know, work on home inventories in case you do lose everything in a fire. It's just an opportunity to start thinking about what's coming and what you can do to prepare yourself before an event happens.
And then what about the entire month of May?
Yeah, so the entire month of May is Wildfire Awareness Month in the state. And that, again, joins a number of western states who kind of have gone together. You know, years ago when I started in this position, it was Wildfire Awareness Week. And as we saw fire seasons get more severe over the years, there was a push by a number of states, including Oregon, to move that to Wildfire Awareness Month. And again, this is an opportunity to, you know, start preparing for the upcoming fire season and, you know, work around your home and just get that information that you need ahead of time. So over the course of the month, you know, on our social media accounts, we'll be posting a lot of different information daily on different tips and ideas and things that homeowners can do. So I encourage people to check that out.
And obviously, as we've been watching this the last few years, there is a shift, and you know, a lot of people debate different aspects of it or what might be causing it, but it just seems like the fire season is a bigger deal.
Yeah, it is. You know, even here locally, you know, you go back to 2013, you have to go to a number of years before that, 2004, to see a large project fire, the Bland Mountain No. 2 fire here on our district. And that was a 4,000 or 5,000 acre fire. It was relatively small in the scheme of things. You know, since 2013, we've had the Douglas Complex, we've had Stouts Creek and Cable Crossing and Horse Prairie and Milepost 97, and now the Archie Creek fire. And they've all been very large fires. They've all had impact on our communities one way, shape, or form, whether it was a direct threat with fire-threatening property or homes, or an indirect threat with the smoke impact. So, you know, fire affects everybody, so it's important that we all take actions to mitigate that.
I was looking over your notes for today, and I was remembering the time you came back following your journey down to the Paradise area for that fire a few years ago. And I remember how eerie it was hearing your description of that and what it was like. And I remember thinking, well, you know, I mean, we're in a, you know, it probably won't ever happen here.
Yeah, you know, I had the opportunity, like you mentioned, to go to the campfire and help out down there. And driving around down there, you know, in the Paradise and Megalia areas, it reminded me a lot of Roseburg, and, you know, similar size of town, similar demographics. A lot of the same businesses that you would see here was down there. And that town was more or less wiped off the map. And it was kind of the same feeling as, you know, how could this happen? And could this happen here? And obviously, you know, what we saw this last year with the Labor Day fires throughout Western Oregon, yes, it could happen here. It did in parts of the state, and it very likely could happen again at some point in the future.
So let's talk about what people can do to get ready for this time of year. I mean, we hear the term defensible space. I was out driving out in one of the rural areas recently, I think out in Melrose, and I happened by some properties as I was going where I was headed, and I just noticed that, gosh, that isn't defensible space. I mean, they've just got trees stacked on top of trees right up to the house.
Yeah, you know, defensible space, we've talked about a lot over the years, but, you know, it's a really important thing to work on, create, and then maintain, because the reality of the situation is we don't have enough fire apparatus anywhere in the state or throughout the West to have a fire truck and a crew for every home. So the steps that homeowners can take ahead of time to mitigate that risk before a fire happens goes a long way. And really, it's a lot of the normal maintenance that people do, you know, in the spring, you know, coming out of winter, cleaning up around their yards, but it's really maintaining that going forward. So, you know, what we tell people is look at the home itself and then the first 100 to 200 feet around that area. And we want to start off at the house first and, you know, make some minor modifications. If you're doing any building or reconstruction or remodeling, is, you know, use fire resistant materials to begin with. And then from there, you know, if you're, you know, make sure the roof's cleaned off so we don't have needles and leaves and stuff like that on it. We want to make sure that we have a non-flammable barrier up against the house itself. And then, you know, we don't want to have a lot of vegetation or flammable materials around the house.
And people look at that and go, well, gosh, I don't want to look like I'm living on the moon.
Yeah. And, you know, on the vegetation side of things, we don't want you to have a moonscape, and you don't have to have a moonscape. But there is some things we need to do to address the fire risk. And, you know, that is looking at the vegetation. And, you know, it's kind of that first 30 feet from the home. And then from there, it's about 100 to 200 feet out from the home. So, you know, in that first 30 feet, we don't want to have a lot of stuff. We want to keep the grass mowed short. Doesn't have to be green if you can't, but keep it mowed short. If we do have plants in there, we want to make sure that they're spaced out, that they're limbed up, and fire-resistant plants. When we get out from that, you know, 30 feet out to 100 feet and then out to 200 feet, we can start incorporating a little bit more vegetation. It doesn't have to be spaced out quite as much, but the big focus is getting rid of those ladder fuels and the underbrush component. So those blackberries, the poison oak, the young saplings, all the stuff that's going to cause the fire to get up in the crowns of the trees and become an issue, that's what we're really focused on. And then those trees that we do leave, again, we're not taking everything out, but we may need to take one or two out, especially if they're dead or dying. But the stuff that is left, we do want to prune up, you know, 6 to 10 feet. Again, the idea is to keep that fire on the ground.
You know, when I think about this, it's like if you had a few acres, if you had a 5-acre parcel, this would be easier to do if you're me with a 70 by 100 foot lot in the city. You know, I've got things closer than they probably should be. Now, we had them all trimmed back last year. That probably needs to happen again. I've got a hydrangea that you cut it way down to nothing, and by August it, you know, basically eclipses the living room window, things like that. So there's a lot of tough things to look out there and figure out, do you really need to kind of maybe do an overhaul?
Yeah, and you made a great point there, you know, with people living in city limits or in smaller lots. You know, a lot of things are kind of overlooked there because we have such a small lot, but it's just as important to do mitigation work in these areas as well, just because homes are so close to each other. You know, homes become a fuel source for a fire. So what we do as homeowners, or don't do to our properties is going to affect our neighbors and vice versa. So I always encourage people to talk to your neighbors and see what you guys can do together collectively rather than just individually.
And sometimes, whether it's newer homes or even ones like mine that are back from the 50s, between houses, it's like 15, 20 feet. There's not a lot of space there.
Exactly. And, you know, when a fire starts in those situations and gets a little bit of wind on it, it spreads very quickly. And again, you know, when you remember and take into account that, you know, the house is a fuel source and the lawn furniture out back's a fuel source and the car and the gas cans and the firewood piles, all that is fuel for a fire. So we need to do things to mitigate that fire risk and work together as homeowners and communities to make sure that we're all better prepared going into this fire season.
One thing I see a lot, especially on larger properties, is wood stacked up, maybe not against the house, but maybe against the shed, things like that. And oftentimes, I mean, I've seen gas cans just sitting in people's yards and things that are right up against, especially sheds.
Yeah, I call this stuff, you know, urban fuels. And that's the stuff that isn't vegetation, that doesn't grow naturally. And a lot of that stuff we want to keep at least 30 feet away from the home. We want to store it properly, so we don't want to have the firewood there or the gas cans or the propane tanks. If we do have the lawn furniture out there, you know, just be aware that we may need to move that in a short notice if a fire does occur, because all that stuff is great things for embers to land on and start new fires and threaten your home.
Got to take a break. When we come back, more with Kyle Reed of the Douglas Forest Protective Association. The interview, a podcast after one at 541radio.com, 1246 at News Radio 1240, KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1247 at News Radio 1240, KQEN. Lars Larson coming up at 1. And tomorrow, our first conversation with the incoming president of Umpqua Community College, Rachel Pokrant, will join us from Colorado, where she is still working with a college there. So Rachel Pokrant tomorrow on Inside Douglas County. We're talking about Wildfire Preparedness Month and Day and getting ready for the spring. Well, spring's here. Getting ready really for the hotter summertime. You've also talked over the years about the FireWise Community Program. Tell people more about that.
So FireWise Community is a great program because it's local and tailored to individual needs of the community. So, you know, what we found, you know, not only here throughout Douglas County, but throughout a lot of number of different states is, you know, the needs of one community are going to be different based on a number of different factors of housing density and fuel types and all those different things. So this program is tailored, again, to the wants and needs of the community. And basically what happens is we have a couple homeowners or community members who are interested. They kind of form a FireWise committee. And then DFPA and the local fire departments work with them to conduct wildfire risk assessments for the community and come up with an action plan of doable items that the homeowners or community can work towards. So we're not paving roads or adding fire hydrants, but we're, you know, encouraging neighbors to have their grass mowed before the beginning of fire season, or have address signs for every home in the community, those kinds of activities. From there, we have to log some hours and do some prevention mitigation activities like that. And then we get into the application process that we submit on behalf of the community, and they become a recognized FireWise community. Right now, we've got about 30 communities that are active in the program spread out throughout the county. You know, one of the big benefits of this is we do have some grant dollars that are tied to that program. You know, unfortunately, we don't have enough grant dollars to meet the demand of or the need of the communities that we serve, but it's definitely a huge benefit to a lot of homeowners who may not be able to do this work otherwise.
So when you say communities, are we talking about, I mean, is this like a rural area, a section? Or, I mean, is this something you just do outside the city limits of various places?
So again, that's the beauty of this program, is it's tailored to the needs of the area. So we have FireWise communities that are, you know, dead end roads with 10 houses on it, and we've got Firewise communities that stretch the entire length of rural fire districts. Most of them are outside of town, but we actually have two here within the city limits of Roseburg. So it's really based on, you know, the needs and wants of those local communities on size and scale and how involved those communities get with the program.
So if somebody wants to maybe get their neighbors, the people around them in a discussion about doing this, where do they go next?
So what my recommendation to people are is to get a couple homeowners on board with the program. There's a lot of information on firewise.org. And then give me a call at 541-672-6507, and we can chat some more and start the process of becoming a Firewise community.
So I'm kind of a data geek. I like to look at stats and statistics, and you brought some along to talk about what have we've had so far. Well, for instance, with fires already.
Yeah, so we're actually up to about 14 fires now for this year on DFPA protected land that have burned a little over 200 acres. And, you know, it doesn't sound like a lot until you consider it's April. And kind of for the same time frame, we should be looking at about 5 fires for about 14 for 14 acres. And the same's true when we look at the statewide fire stats. You know, statewide, we're seeing fires up across the state, 142 fires that have burned about 1,800 acres. You know, most of those acres have come from a handful of fires. So in addition to the Marshall's Place fire we had here last week, there was a large fire that burned about 1,600 acres over out of Klamath County. So we've seen several larger fires for this time of year, but also the number of fires that we're seeing both locally and across the state are up significantly for this time of year.
A lot of times on the police scanner, I will hear what turns out to be an escape debris burn fire. It seems like we're having a lot of those.
We are, and that's unfortunately very common for the spring and fall months. You know, there's a lot of residents out there that are trying to do good things and, you know, work on their defensible space and clean up around their homes, which is all great work. And then they choose to burn. And the issues that we come up with that with there is they either burn when conditions are poor, when it's, you know, a warm, sunny day like this with a little bit of wind, those fires can easily take off and spread. Or we'll see where they burnt, you know, several days prior when it may have been more favorable conditions, but they didn't fully extinguish that fire. So, you know, now we have a hot, sunny day, the wind picks up, and that fire starts creeping out and burning again. So we really encourage people, you know, we want to see people use fire as a tool on their property, but we want to make sure that they're doing it safely.
Now, and of course, wherever you live, things vary in terms of what you should be doing.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's one of the difficulty things with debris burning is the rules aren't necessarily the same across the board. So I always encourage people to check, in addition to our restrictions with the local fire departments. You know, there's a number of cities that have ordinances around Douglas County that restrict when debris burning is allowed. So again, please check with that local fire department as well to make sure that you're in compliance.
So if it's okay to do it, what should you be doing when you do have a fire?
So, you know, the first thing, especially right now with kind of where we're at leading into fire season, is make sure that you have a fire trail around that pile ahead of time. Make sure you have your fire tools and your water on site, and then stay with that pile until it's completely burned out. And again, don't just walk away from it and let it smolder and kind of smoke and do its thing for a couple of days, because that's where we run into those problems again is, you know, on a windy day that fire will pick up and take off. But go ahead and make sure it's fully extinguished. And it's just like extinguishing a campfire. We want to put water on it, stir up those ashes, and continue to do that until there's no heat or smoke coming off of that pile.
All right, so about 3 minutes left. Back to fun statistics. Where are we at in terms of rainfall right now?
Well, that's another area where things aren't looking great. So when you look for Roseburg, our measurements put us about 10 inches below normal rainfall for the rain year, which started October 1st. So going into this winter, forecasts of La Nina, typically with a La Nina winter, you see above normal temperatures and below normal precipitation. The precipitation just didn't pan out for us. You know, we're seeing we had a pretty good snowpack there at one point, but that's quickly dwindling with these warm spring days that we've had. We're down to about 59% there on the snowpack, and that's going to really affect the Cascades and portions of south central Oregon going into the next couple months as that snow comes off earlier than normal.
And what about the drought level?
You know, we saw here a month or two ago, we thought we were kind of turning the corner. We had a wet month there, and conditions were starting to look favorable, and then things dried right back out. And now the drought conditions throughout the county are between a moderate to severe drought, depending on which side of the county you're in. So that's definitely not what we're wanting to see at this time of year, with a month and a half or so before the start to our traditional fire season.
So is that how unusual is that to be with areas in severe drought and it's April?
It really just varies from one year to the next and the rainfall that we get. So, overall, it's been another relatively dry year. A couple of years ago, we had some really wet years, but the problem here is not only has it been a dry winter, but we've had several back-to-back years that have been very dry. So that also has a compounding effect on the fuels.
What about temperatures versus normal?
Yeah, so our forecast, basically looking at the month of May and then going forward for the next 3 months, our May forecast is calling for above normal temperatures and not a really good outlook for the precipitation. We'll get a new forecast here at the beginning of the month, so we'll see where that pans out. But that May to July outlook for the three-month outlook from NOAA isn't looking very favorable. It's kind of staying in that same above normal temperatures and below normal precipitation outlook.
If people want to find out more about some of the things you've talked about today, how do they connect with you at DFPA?
Our website, dfpa.net. We're also active on our social media accounts, or they can call us at our office at 541-672-6507.
Kyle Reed, the Fire Prevention Officer of the Douglas Forest Protective Association, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
1257, News Radio 1240, KQEN.
Been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications, your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.